Welcome, everybody. Once again, it's the Shea Anything Podcast. As Andy bangs down on the table, it's Andy Martino, and I'm Doug Williams. Remember, you can search for Shea Anything on any podcast app. Find us, rate, and review us. We love that you listen. We love that you interact with us on Twitter. We hope to get some more Shea Hayes, SNY.tv/Shea Anything. You can upload a video or voice memo and talk to us. Jim from Bethpage, we got yours. We just don't have enough time today. Kind of a crowded show. We got a few. Lots to talk about, Andy, because we had kind of a crazy day yesterday, and a crazy day in all of Mets land and across Major League Baseball. Sandy Alderson basically saying his cancer's back, has been since April. He's taking a leave of absence from the Mets. And you have a column up on SNY.tv that's pretty fantastic, and it mirrors kind of what our 6 o'clock show was yesterday, which was a conversation, really, about who this man is and what he's like, because it's a, you got to look at that because of what the press conference was yesterday, which was, hey, public, my cancer's back. And then he went and kind of condemned his own job performance. I keep saying the same thing, but it's a fascinating look at a human being and how anyone can do what he did. And your column kind of visits that.
Yeah, he's obviously a strong person. He's a person of integrity. He's somebody who I really have enjoyed dealing with. Felt like, even in my capacity as a member of the media, where my job is to challenge and sometimes, if not enter into conflict, certainly on opposite sides of the fence, just really felt like you'd learn from talking to him. This is a real pioneer in the game. I don't know that people who are into analytics all realize that it came from Sandy Alderson. Sandy Alderson was a lawyer who took over the Oakland A's and didn't have any baseball experience. In 1983, he became the GM after being an attorney there, and he wasn't a baseball guy to speak of. So he started reading Bill James, who was obscure at the time. He brought that into a front office. He gave that stuff to Billy Beane, who became Mr. Moneyball, and that revolution spread through the game. So you learn from him as an intelligent person. I have had the chance to have side conversations with him about current events and all kinds of things. It's always just a really interesting person, and a person, as I said, of integrity, who even the folks in the Mets, for example, the Mets were talking on Wednesday. It was the first day that the Mets went to work at Citi Field without the guy who'd been their leader for 8 years.
Right.
In fact, I was told he left right after the press conference. He didn't even stay for the game. That's how abrupt his tenure with the Mets ended. It was just once he said goodbye, he was out. And so even those who didn't necessarily have a great personal connection with him, are really down and in shock because they all learned about his illness less than 24 hours ago, and he's gone, and to a person, they all respect him.
The fact that he, and Christie said this to the Daily News, and a couple people said it around our newsroom when he was talking with Jeff Wilpon, that he kind of fired himself, which
he did.
Sounds bad, and it's not really, because it's a reflection of who the man is, you know? The fact that he would leave right after the presser, that he feels like he had to bring up merit. Like, if he had not brought up merit once, that would have been fine.
He could have, that's a great point, Doug.
My cancer's back. All of us would have been like, all right, dude, do what you have to do. But he's the one who said, I'm not sure I even deserve to come back.
It's an extraordinary moment in the history of the franchise and in baseball in general for him to do exactly what you said, fire himself. He's technically taking a leave of absence. Clearly, he won't be returning to the job. He said he doesn't deserve to return to the job. And, that he saved his boss, who was sitting next to him, from having to do that. He took the bullet himself, which is just, I said to somebody with the Mets, boy, that was an extraordinary moment. And the answer that that person said was it was a Marine moment, meaning that he's a duty-bound guy who believes in serving admirably the people who he serves, the people he's working for, whatever the situation is. And that's what he did. He literally took, with the franchise being in pretty bad shape right now on the field, he took the decision about his future out of his employer's hands and made it himself in public. It was something.
So now we move forward. I mean, we are both covering the Mets today, the non-Sandy Alderson as the general manager Mets. Mm-hmm. And this is going to continue to be a story. It's an interesting time of the year, especially in the baseball season, for this to happen because you're in late June. Come July, you know, the Mets are in a state of transition, not just in the front office, but also player personnel is going to be drastically different, you'd think, in 1 month's time. Mm-hmm. So I know you're doing reporting today for tonight's show. What is this going to look like in the front office? And is there any way that their view of the roster is different now that they don't have Sandy above them?
Yeah, good question. That's the question today. And I think that's fair to the Mets fans, paying customers, people who have an attachment to the team, to want to know, all right, we feel terrible about Sandy, but what's going to happen with the team? So after writing about Sandy initially, that's been my focus today. And I can tell you some things about the three-headed monster, which, strangely enough, the Mets people themselves are referring to it, apparently without irony, our three-headed monster, Omar Minaya, John Rico, J.P. Ricciardi, and what that means for the near and long term. One of the first questions that I had was just, how is this going to work? A general manager makes a recommendation to ownership after having conversations with his baseball department. What I was told was that the three of them will be making recommendations to ownership about decisions, that they really are, over the next couple of months, pretty equal in their standing. Now, that doesn't mean that John Rico can't walk into Jeff or Fred Wilpon's office and say, we've got a trade for Familia, what do you think? But they're all empowered to do so. Another new piece of information, and check our website too, because I'm literally in the process of writing a piece about this and bring it all together. The three of them will all be available to the media. We'll be out on the field before games. Omar will be in the Miami trip upcoming with the Mets. He hasn't been the executive on a trip with the Mets in 8 years. I mean, he was on their last trip, but not as the out front executive. So these guys are going to make an effort to be out there. They're empowered to speak for the team. They're empowered to make decisions. And there will be an extensive GM search potentially in October, looking at interviewing outside candidates and that could go in any direction. But that doesn't slow down what Mets business is going to be. And in fact, I was told, look for us to be pretty active on a lot of fronts soon.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yes, there is.
Okay, so if after the season, like this is an interesting, we used the audition word yesterday. Mm-hmm. So if you do view this as an audition for a general manager, you got three guys making the moves for this team. And you'd have to think they're going to make a lot of moves. It's not like their roster is going to stay exactly the same. And it's not like you know what this team is and what it's going to look like. So let's say they trade five guys, they release some guys, they bring up some young kids, they bring in some new talent. If the Mets, like you said, they're planning to go interview outside candidates, do you think that the personalities of these three guys will be like, look, two of us are former GMs and one of us was going to be the guy until Sandy left? Will those three guys leave if they even consider the idea of hiring someone outside the organization? I know I'm getting
ahead
of
myself. Not if they consider it, because they're already considering it.
Okay. And they know.
If they hire somebody from outside, then, yeah, the way that works typically is then that person eventually, as Sandy immediately brought in Paul DePodesta, J.P. Ricciardi, Rico stayed. He was passed over for that. But there was a lot of talk in 2008 or 9 that Rico was going to be the GM after Omar. Obviously, that didn't happen. So if he gets passed over again, I'm not even saying it's leaning that way. It's very uncertain. But if he gets passed over again, that's something to watch. Same thing with Ricciardi. Omar, I believe, is more of a part of the framework there. It's just sort of, he's a Met. That guy is a Met. He grew up in Corona, Queens. He served as assistant GM. He's back in his advisor. He is an advisor. He does a lot of work in the community. Wears a lot of hats. Very close to Fred Wilpon. And I don't see him as a GM candidate in this case. So I think he's a little different here.
So I'm just picturing, I don't know if you've ever had this feeling here, but sometimes, and I trust, seriously, I trust every single producer that we work with, whether it's here doing this podcast or doing a show, and I promise this is going
to
make sense in a second.
Yeah, I'm waiting
to
see
where you're going with it. But a lot of times, if I work with a producer for a week straight or 10 days straight, and I build up like this rapport with them, and I have a rapport with everybody, but I'm just saying, if there's a consistency there...
Not everybody.
If there's a consistency there, and then suddenly, on a Monday, you've got somebody else, and they pitch a topic to you, sometimes you're like, oh, I wish I could ask that person that I work with.
Yeah, right.
So I'm just picturing, let's say John Rico ends up being the point person, and someone gives him a boatload of players and an offer for Noah Syndergaard.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy said yesterday, his phone, you know, he's going to pick up the phone if somebody calls.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you just feel like, I kind of want to see what Sandy feels about
this? Sure. Oh, I'm sure they'll be calling.
These are his guys. And no one knows them better than he does.
And they respect his opinions.
John Rico's been here for a long time. But
yeah.
I just picture it being difficult to just totally move on from having that person above you.
Well, interesting. They'll use him as an advisor, I bet. They respect him. Omar Minaya came in and instantly, people thought that was going to be a weird dynamic. Instantly, Minaya was like, oh, I like working with Sandy. So there's a good chemistry there, and I'm sure they'll use him. Well, of course, being respectful of the fact that he's going to be undergoing cancer treatments that are so serious that he had to step aside. But yeah, they'll call him. But you know how it is that he's not in the office today. Baseball goes on, and they will settle into the new dynamic, I think.
It's just if you think we've talked about the amount of pressure that comes with trading a DeGrom or a Syndergaard.
I think Rick goes up to that. He's been training for this job for so long. I think that Ricciardi's done the – I know that Ricciardi's done the job. Minaya's done the job. So I think they've got enough experience in there where I know what you're saying, but you don't get to – I mean, those guys have very successful, high-ranking baseball careers already, confidence in themselves, mm-hmm. know their system, and have Sandy as a resource. But I don't think you'll have any hesitation for guys to pull the trigger or take something to ownership.
Back to Sandy quickly. We got a Twitter question saying, at FlushingFlash11 said, I, along with fellow Met fans, have been very critical of Sandy's results in 18, but never the person. And I think, by the way, that's a very common thing. I mean, in sports or in media, a lot of times you end up criticizing somebody for the job that they're doing, because that's what a lot of people in media are paid to do, and that's what Twitter's all about. It doesn't mean that any of you out there, if you've complained about a move the Mets have made, that you've ever said anything critical about Sandy the person. But anyway, back to the question from Flushing Flash. Is there a way fans can reach out to him? I fought cancer, and sometimes it helps to know how many people are pulling for you. Do you know the answer to that?
It's a great question. I hadn't thought about that.
He's got a Twitter account.
I mean, I don't think, to be honest, he hasn't been active on that in years.
He has told us he doesn't look at it.
I don't think he's ever really looked at his mentions, frankly, on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think he enjoyed. I used to hear that he would pace around the office, like doing his own comedy writing, and be like, hey, so-and-so, what do you think of this line? And then chuckle at himself. But I don't think he didn't really connect with the interactive aspect of Twitter. That's a good question.
There's got to be like a general phone number for the Mets. Call them and then try and maybe send them a letter.
Yeah, call their switchboard. And yes, which I'm going to. Wait a minute, what am I doing? I have it in my phone, obviously.
Yeah, you could call the Mets. You could, send them in a good old-fashioned written letter. But
Mets switchboard is 718-507-6387. That's their public number. Calling the New York Mets, anyone can do it, and I'm sure they could direct you to a way to send well wishes to Sandy. It's a nice thought.
Yeah, I agree. And just quickly, there's one anecdote that you told on our show last night, and that's in the column on SNY.TV, and you can go to Andy's Twitter account to find the column he wrote about Sandy the person, but it's spectacular, the story of email that he sent you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't calling your article spectacular.
Well,
it is very good, but so I'm not sure I would give you that form of
spectacular.
Flattery.
It would seem above and beyond. That's why
the
I blanched.
Email made me laugh out loud.
He said, I looked it up last night too. It's funny. He was mad. I was in Las Vegas writing a feature about Noah Syndergaard. But while I was doing it, I'm talking to scouts and people that are there, just like I normally would. And after I wrote the big Syndergaard feature for the Sunday paper, I wrote a Monday blog post saying, like, scout didn't think that Plawecki had a great arm or whatever, stuff like that, you know? And I'm in Citi Field the following day in the press box, seventh or eighth inning. I get an email from Sandy Alderson. And honestly, that doesn't happen very often. He makes himself accessible to writers and reporters, but he's not often one to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, that's weird. And the subject line said, today's column. And okay. And I open up ruling on the S word there in the control room. No FCC guidelines here, right?
That's a good question, Jay.
Really? Okay, so it said, today's column. I open up the email, and the entire body of the email was complete horseshit. And I'm like, okay. So after the game, he's coming out of his box, I guess, in the concourse next to the press conference room. I run out and I go, what was that? And he says, he starts railing at me. And he goes, that's not a fair call. He got a little twinkle in his eye, but he had a point to make. And he stuck to his guns. And there was something I left out of the column because, frankly, I thought it was a little self-aggrandizing to say or could be interpreted that way. But I'll just tell the whole story here because it was a nice, memorable moment between me and Alderson there, too. And I said, you know, frankly, we were kind of going at it on this topic for a few minutes. We, again, smiling, but going at it, making our points. And I said, frankly, I'm surprised with the amount of stuff that can be written that's cheap. You're coming after me. When I just wrote one thing you didn't like, what are you coming after me for? And he leans right into my face and he goes, did you ever think that maybe I expected a little more of you? And I was like, oh, wow. Shut me down. It was like a compliment, but it was really tough. And it gave me a sense of just the high standards that he holds people, including himself.
What was your reaction to that?
He probably shut it down. What did I say? I said, all right, then. Thank you.
You're like,
I don't know.
That's kind of it's a borderline fatherly thing to say.
It was, which is not our relationship. But we were having a heated, honest moment, and that's how it climaxed. It was an interesting moment, an interesting guy.
Just a fascinating guy. Mm-hmm. You look back at his presser, the last big-time presser he had before this one, I think he's had maybe one in the interim or maybe just a conference call. But do you remember the one where where he just kind of sat back and like talked for a while. It seemed like he was on the couch in his shrink's office. And you know, you saw him after and you could tell.
Oh, that's right. It was about injuries. And he goes, you know what? I think that we're too careful about injuries. I think the guys should play. And he said too careful. And then he kind of moved on. And I had my hand up like, wait a minute. And the PR, whoever was running the show that day was like, trying to get to someone else because this is an injury topic. Yeah. It could be a landmine. But Sandy literally goes, I think Andy has a question. He could see that I wanted to get him going on this. So I asked, well, what do you mean by we're too careful? And he goes, well, blah, blah, blah. And he goes off into a big thing that became news. And I saw him later in the clubhouse, or outside the clubhouse. I go, was that my fault? And he's getting it, twinkle his eye, grin. He goes, I feel better. I had to get that off my chest. I mean, he's like, it's funny.
And for anyone who doesn't
And the
watch,
way he engages with BNNY, too.
Thing. BNNY, he doesn't have to watch our show or care about it at all.
He's into it.
But he's into it. And we found that out in the first season of our show. It was just this experiment, I would call it. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
It was,
Where it was the first baseball show on SNY that was actually going to give half to the Yankees and half to the Mets. And it was going to explore the idea that hopefully there are some Yankee fans that watch at 5:30 that roll over into 6 o'clock.
And we were allowed to take off our ties and be a little goofy.
Exactly. And Sandy, for whatever reason, got in touch with you at some point and said, you know, I like the show. And he came on in the first season. He came on in the second season.
He came on in like a snowy night when we were still at 51st Street the first time. And he was like wearing jeans and snow boots. It was the most informal thing. Sit down to a half hour live TV and he engaged. Like we were doing these games, you know, that show we do, silly stuff. And in the beginning, it was even more experimental. And it was like, we had this game called Peyton or Bartolo that night. You remember?
Yeah.
It's all coming back to me now that we're talking about it.
And
it was
like, I remember that.
It was like, I don't remember. It was something playing on the fact that they're both old.
Yeah.
And it was like, and he would just play. He was a contestant.
I do remember that Sandy. A lot of times, like, we did goofy stuff with him on the show, but I do remember the first question I asked him. It was coming after the offseason last year where he had, in essence, brought back the same team.
I have a tree inspection on July 2nd.
Oh, that's a nice reminder on your phone. He had essentially brought back the same team, and our first question to him was, why do you expect this to be different? And that's a pretty hard-hitting question to start the show with, but
he was good with it.
Yeah. Always good with it. It wasn't like we had to butter him up. It wasn't like we had to give him some softballs to get him to like the show. He just liked the content. Mm-hmm. And we've been hard on him. Like, it's not like we've, because we know he's watching or because we know he's interested,
He's interested in the world, too. I was on MSNBC once, and when I came up to talk about the kneeling and the Kaepernick stuff and the anthem, which I was writing about at the time for HuffPost, and when I came off the set, he was like, he texted me, hey, da, da, da. Like, he's just sitting there watching MSNBC, interested in the world. That's not typical for baseball. Most baseball guys, honestly, are like looking at Twitter and reading Baseball America. Wide breadth of interest.
Well, I mean, yesterday was just a tough day. I was texting a little bit with Steve Gelbs earlier today, and, you know, I texted him something last night. He didn't get back to me till today. I just think, you know, I said, great job with everything. He said, yeah, it's a whirlwind, crazy day. And just knowing that guy who's just been there, kind of, mm-hmm. I mean, and think about Steve's tenure as doing his job, and you've been reporting on this team for a long time. He's been kind of the key cog there. And the guy you'd go to, and... you know, it's kind of crazy that he's not there anymore. But I want to ask you, I don't know the answer to this. We didn't talk before the show. Have you done any further reporting on, I don't know necessarily the new three-headed monsters you called it earlier, but just in general, the Mets feeling about which of the players that we've speculated about mm-hmm. are going to be gone in a month? Like, do you know what's going to happen here or what they're leaning towards doing?
Well, one question that I had was, that I was able to ask someone this morning was, now that you're surprisingly without your GM, does that and may hire from outside the organization for your next GM, does that slow the process of deciding what to do with the big, big things, trading Jacob deGrom, trading Syndergaard, and let alone Familia Cabrera, just the whole thing? Those guys are more, obviously, walkier guys, but deGrom, Syndergaard. And I was told, nope, not at all. Nothing's changing. That's an active discussion to trade those guys. It's a live possibility. It might not happen. In fact, I would term those things unlikely to happen in season for a variety of reasons. Oh, but they're a consideration, as I've said, and I guess the main thing to convey on that is that the absence of Alderson doesn't change that. They're not waiting to do anything. If the next general manager of that team is Doug Williams, you might arrive with no Jacob deGrom.
That would be really cool. I'd like to have the job.
But wouldn't you rather they keep DeGrom if you're going to be the GM? No, wait. If you're starting, you'd probably rather have the prospects.
Well, here's another thing to think about. Let's say you're John Rico. I keep saying these three guys are all in one, but you went through it earlier. They're all in very different circumstances.
Yeah.
J.P. Ricciardi has done it. Omar Minaya has not just done it. He's done it for the Mets. So the chances of him getting the job back are you know,
yeah,
slim.
Yeah, I don't see it.
But if you're John Rico, don't you want to do something in this season that kind of gives you or gives the franchise an idea of what you can do at the helm?
Yeah.
Not that you need to do something drastic, but whether it's getting more than you thought you could get for a Familia and Cabrera package to the Indians or something like that, I don't know. But if I'm trying to make my mark, mm-hmm. I think I'm trying to see what I can get, what kind of haul I could get for Noah Syndergaard or something like that. If I'm thinking selfishly in his shoes.
Yeah, yes, fair point. I don't think he's a selfish guy. I think that he is similar to Alderson in that he will try to do what he feels is best for the organization. But yeah, as a human being, look, I think the fact is he does have to convince them to hire him if he wants the job. And
it's crazy that he potentially hasn't done that already, but
well,
yes.
That's a good point. And they know who all these guys are. Ricciardi's the shortest tenured person in the organization. He's been there for 8 years. They know these people. So that's a good question on what else do they have to do. But since no decisions have been made, and since they're very open to the possibility of doing an extensive GM search at the end of the year, obviously that tells you that they have some convincing left to do.
A couple more tweets I want to read. The first one is very relevant to today. Can you tell at Martino NYC to get off his phone when you're talking on the podcast?
You know what? I saw this. Okay, finish reading it.
Or at least silence it. This is from Andrew AJT. Really distracting, constantly hear it throughout the podcast, LOL.
Okay.
What I don't know is,
Andrew, this is an issue for the first time today. I know that I'm making a terrible case for myself by doing it today, but today's a special circumstance. It's a major day in the history of the Mets franchise, and I'm trying to do extensive reporting, so I have my phone right here. But do you remember another time when it's made a noise on this set?
I don't know.
What am I, Davey Johnson?
Unless for some reason, that's a good Davey Johnson reference. I guess there's a possibility he can hear you like tip-tapping on here.
Andrew, we need more information because I feel that I've been unfairly accused. We need more.
If you're listening, just send us a tweet and let us know. Are you talking about?
You need to get specific.
You know what he might be talking about?
What?
The videos on Twitter. When maybe I'm talking and you're on your phone.
But he said.
Constantly hear it.
To hear it.
Or at least
I don't think
that's
that you
true.
Heard anything from my phone on this podcast this year. Andrew, But if you have some specific evidence or even anecdotal, you go ahead and bring it.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I look forward to that, Andrew. Angry Mets fan says, okay, here's the thing for the podcast, if you think it's apropos. Is it ridiculous for a fan to abandon their team based on one player being traded? I might be ridiculous for feeling that way, but I do. I really do, and I pay for season tickets, so this isn't casual for me.
Look.
Fantastic question.
Yeah.
And I know we've talked about DeGrom getting traded. I don't even think that's what this is about. But don't you think that even at Angry Mets fan, if they traded Jacob DeGrom and got back a bunch of prospects and they won five games in a row, you're back?
I don't know. I think I don't know how you as an individual Angry Mets fan would act in that circumstance, but I will say that it's not a ridiculous thing to say because the entire act of being a sports fan is irrational. So any behavior within that is fine. I'm not saying that as a negative. Like, it's irrational, like believing in God is irrational. Like, when you decide to take a leap into something. No, and I'm not saying anything about believing in God. I'm saying that when you commit, or being in love. Being in love with my wife is irrational. These are feelings.
Why are these things irrational?
Because they're feeling-based. They're not based in logic or reason. They're based in feeling. And therefore, they're irrational. You might be hearing irrational as a negative. I'm saying that irrational is a neutral. It just means that it's not based in rational thought. It's based in feeling, and loving a sports team is based in feeling and not rational thought. So you can behave any way that you see fit within
it.
I
don't view rooting for a sports team to be irrational.
It's like faith.
It's a thing.
Right.
You grow up loving it, and it exists.
There's in the world, inside you, there's rational thought, and there's feeling. Those are two separate categories.
You just reminded me, honestly, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way.
Oh, but great.
Have you seen The Staircase on Netflix?
No.
There's something about the inflection of your voice. Michael Peterson is the key, he's a potential murderer in the show. Now, again, don't take that the wrong way, mm-hmm. but he's also an author. There's something about the inflection in your voice that just reminded me of Michael Peterson.
Okay.
If anyone's listening.
So I'm not saying, to be clear, I'm not saying it's bad to be a sports fan, believe in God, or be in love. I'm saying that those things come from belief, which is not a rational place.
I would argue that a large percentage, if not, well, I don't know. Look, I don't know. I don't want to put anything on anybody. I would guess a large percentage of the people that listen to this podcast are sports fans, believe in God, and have been or are in love.
And those are all beautiful things. I believe that feeling should be emphasized over rational thought.
Poor angry Met fan is like, wow, this is not the question I
You asked. Just wanted to know about
that. Look, if you trade Jacob DeGrom, I get it if you're upset. But I also think that Jacob DeGrom, other than being great, it's not like he's done anything. He's not like that beloved Met. He's just great. Would you agree with that?
I don't know. I can't say.
I could be wrong too, but
Who beloves who?
What's an example of like a widely beloved?
Tom Seaver trade obviously is the example of this.
But
I have a friend who was a lifelong Mets fan who jumped to the Red Sox when they traded Scott Kazmir. So I know a guy that did this. It's kind of a cheap move because it was in 2004, I think, when the Red Sox were ascending. But my opinion on sports fandom. Like, I do not believe that you should be one of these Sal Licata types that's like, you can't be a Yankee or Met fan. You can't switch. You can't. Like, all these rules. If you're a Met fan your whole life and one day you wake up and you're like, I like the White Sox today. Fine. It's your money. It's your time. Do whatever you want with your fandom.
I'm sorry. I think that's fraudulent. Whatever.
It's a fun thing.
Angry Met fan, to try and answer your question, I don't think it's ridiculous. I get it if you're upset. I just personally think that if the team ends up being better because they do something, I think you'll be back in. And I don't think Jacob DeGrom, before this year, was the type of player that Met fans were like, oh, I want him as on this team for life no matter what.
Y'all might have said that at one point about Matt Harvey. If that guy's ever gone, then
that's
out.
That's true. So yeah, things can change.
Yeah.
Jason wants us to do a poll on Twitter. What do you want the poll to actually be, Jason? Like, would you be a Met fan anymore if you?
Who you got, Andy or Doug? Just who you got.
Just
who
you got.
Let's see what people do with that.
All right.
You're gonna win that in a landslide.
Yeah. Well, why do people yell at you on Twitter so much? There are people that love on you too.
It's both all things because I report on something.
You think it's 50-50?
I don't know. Probably not. Like, no, of course, internet sentiment is going to tilt negative, period.
Yeah.
In any sense. So, no, there's no way it's 50-50. But I write about something that people are passionate about. Like, there are emotions around, and I'm not afraid to have an opinion. So, between those two things.
I see political writers, too. If you click on their tweets, the first few replies are nasty. I mean, it's always, just the way it is.
Yeah, like, if you look at, if you look at people who cover the White House for the New York Times in a relatively straightforward way, there are people that say, you're a Trump shill. There are people that say, you're a Trump hater. Like, that's just, like, the way that reporting can be perceived.
Do you ever, does it ever get to you?
No. And anyone would say that. When I was new to this in 2009, my first year as a beat writer, which was also like the first year of Twitter, and blog comments were still kind of a thing that people cared about back then because the internet wasn't quite as interactive. Yes, of course it bothered me because I spent the early part of my career with people saying, hey, good job. We're going to give you this new gig, or you're going to interview for this job, or nice story. And then all of a sudden everyone's like being nasty and insulting and personal. It was difficult the first year, and then I truly, honestly developed a shell around it, and I don't care.
My answer to the question that I asked you that you didn't ask back, but I'm going to ask myself.
Well, you don't get any interaction Twitter following.
I have very little Twitter following, but I do sometimes, like, if I get notes about the show, Baseball Night in New York specifically, some people are like, this, when you do this, it's unwatchable, or like, that segment was terrible.
Or you're a professional haircut.
Well, yeah, I've been called a professional haircut. I don't, not to say that I let it hurt my feelings or anything, but I think about it in terms of if the content of our show is bothering you, I find that interesting.
You know what? That's fair. I when I say I have a shell around it, I do take a second to say, like, is this a legit criticism?
Right.
And sometimes when it is, I'll make an adjustment. You can tell the difference between a legit criticism and mean. It's very, or like, every once in a while, I'll give one response to somebody. Like, oh, I hear what you have to say, da-da-da. And if they come back nasty, I'm like, okay, troll account, you know? But if sometimes you'll actually have a rational exchange.
Yeah.
I'm sure you will, too.
It's the rational exchanges, honestly, that get to you the most, at least in my case.
Yeah.
There's been times where we've had very silly Baseball Night in New York shows, and I've gotten a tweet that's like, you know, that show's so ridiculous, you know.
And we're like, yeah, you're right.
And I am sometimes like, yeah, you're right. Maybe we did it over the top. But if you watch us every night and you love us, then you love that, you know. So you can't take it entirely seriously. I don't know. We've gone off on a tangent, but
But we listen. I honestly, like, I all feedback is interesting.
Yes.
And worth thinking about.
And by
when
the way,
it's mean, I just dismiss it.
Since we started doing this podcast, I've never enjoyed my mentions more, honestly, because I have fired up Met fans who genuinely like our show and want to talk about the team. And, like, for me, that's great. And, you know, just today, I've gotten several tweets that have been fascinating. And, I don't know, keep reaching out. We'd love to hear from you. Saturday night, I'll go first.
Wait, weren't we supposed to talk about Matt Wheeler, Frazier, and Cabrera? Do you want to do that?
We can skip it.
Okay.
I mean, we kind of did talk about it.
I don't think they're going to trade Matt's.
Why not?
I think anything is fair game, but I just think that they need some pitchers. They need some guys to pitch. If someone will give them a king's ransom for any of these things, then they would consider
it. The names on our paper are Familia, Matz, Wheeler, Frazier, Cabrera.
I believe that Familia will go. I believe that Matz and Wheeler will not bring back the value commensurate with what the Mets want their value to be because the other teams viewed them as talented but unreliable. I believe that Frazier would need to build up some value by performing better, staying healthier. I believe that Cabrera will go.
Wheeler's never thrown harder. I'm just going to say that.
No, I know, but you're like, we got a guy with that kind of stuff, and your trading partner's like, you got a guy who might be on the DL next week.
Right.
You're not gonna match up on value.
Well, luckily, we have a couple weeks before the deadline to talk about this, and we will talk about it on the Shea Anything podcast. As for Saturday night, I will go first. I was down the Jersey Shore, met up with some friends that I don't get to see very often, and it was a ton of fun. Actually, a couple of the friends that I ran into, huge Met fans, and fascinating conversation. And, you know, I actually, we were talking about the GM situation before the Sandy news broke, and we were talking about the possibility of Rico getting the job, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, my Mets fan friend said, look, the thing about Rico is he may be great, but he's been under Sandy's tutelage for so long. So if you really want change, I'm not sure that that's the direction you want to go in. I'm only sharing that anecdote because it's so relevant. Mm-hmm. And that was part of my evening, was genuinely talking with Mets fans to gauge what their vibe is right now.
I got to tell you, mine's going to be boring, as it's supposed to be, as the conception of this is that I'm boring. But a millennial who lives in New York City engaging in a dialogue about John Rico on Saturday night, that's really thrilling.
Well, no, look, we're having a couple beers. We're hanging out. We're in Seagirt, New Jersey. You know, you got your
a lot of Jersey Shore on our Saturday nights.
That's true.
It's a common theme.
It's
nothing
the
wrong
summer,
with that.
And the Jersey Shore is fantastic.
It
What's
is.
Not to like?
Are you taking a summer vacation? Will there be a week without Doug on the podcast at some point? Probably.
In August, I'm gone for a week.
Me too.
Nice.
What did I do? This is good. This is exciting. I grilled kielbasa. I watched 2 episodes of The Americans. Then I sat on the couch where my wife went and had a drink with the neighbor. And then, Doug, I read a fantastic book in bed, and I went to sleep.
Did you just eat kielbasa? Like, I think of kielbasa
I cooked some peas and...
What an odd meal.
Well, no, wait a minute. It's a protein, a vegetable, and...
I think of kielbasa as... I think of it as a side product. Like
it's a salad. Turkey Polska kielbasa by like Turkey Hill Farms. I think you buy it in the grocery store. You slice it, you throw it on the grill. 8 minutes later, you've got a tasty protein-filled dinner.
All right. Yeah, tonight's sausage and peas night at the Martino house.
My son will eat it too, which is not
Flynn, Texas, case. Michael Flynn. What about Blevins? In terms of being one of those players that you could trade?
Well, starting pitching is going to be a premium at the deadline.
Mets starting pitcher, Jerry Blevins. How about 5 scoreless appearances and then you trade him?
If he gets hot.
Yeah, let's get some value going.
That could be an August move.
Like, that's true. That's
because he would have to take some time to build back up some value.
Thank you, Flynn. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been the Shea Anything Podcast. Search for Shea Anything in your podcast app. Subscribe, rate, and review. We love hearing from you. SNY.tv/Shea Anything. This has been Doug and Andy saying so long. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.